Hello, and welcome to The Board Table, a podcast from the North Carolina School Boards Association. I'm Leanne Winner, the association's executive director and your host. On today's episode of The Board Table, Bruce Mildwarf, the Director of Governmental Relations, sits down with Jeff Coltrane, Senior Education Advisor to Governor Cooper, to discuss the newly released governor's budget and his education priorities. Let's listen in.
Thanks, Leanne. Jeff Coltrane, Governor Cooper's Education Policy Advisor. Thank you so much for joining me at the board table.
Hi, Bruce. It's great to be here with you. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Yeah, no problem. The governor's budget doesn't come around every day. This is a big deal. And, when we talk about budgets, it really speaks to priorities, right? And so when we look at the education budget, the governor's proposed education budget, what are the priorities?
Absolutely, Bruce. And thanks again for having me. And you're right. Budgets do say a lot about priorities. And I think this budget, as have all of Governor Cooper's budget, but this budget in particular really lays out the governor's priorities nicely. As he said at the State of the State address earlier in March, that once-in-a-generation opportunities require once-in-a-generation investments. And this budget really is putting the governor's money where his mouth is in terms of that. This is a budget that really builds on the prosperity that we've seen over the last couple of years with the economic development and jobs announcements, our robust revenues that have been coming in, as well as taking advantage of money that we have to make investments now to help us further recover from the challenges caused by the pandemic. We have a $3 billion surplus that the Office of State Budget Management, which is part of the governor's cabinet, and the Fiscal Research Division at the General Assembly agreed to, that $3 billion surplus is there. And so now is really the time to invest in our students, in their education, in our workforce, and in our families, so that every corner of our state can thrive and we continue to build that enduring prosperity that we know we all want and that we all share.
So, one thing that we are hearing across the state, one of a big issue, staff shortages across the board. For added emphasis, I'm talking all positions, mm-hmm. right? For more emphasis, all types of teachers, to bus drivers, you name it. How does this budget address that issue?
And Bruce, we have heard the same concern. And unfortunately, it's not just in education in our public schools. There's also hiring challenges in state government as well as local governments. And so the governor really wanted to make some strong investments in helping to address those challenges, but also helping to address the challenges that families are facing with ensuring that their pay is keeping pace with other challenges around. So the governor has proposed average 18% increase in teacher pay. So this is salaries for educators. It'll be 10% in the first year of the biennium, so next school year, and then another 6% in the second year. And this would raise our beginning teacher pay from $37,000 this year to $46,000 by the 24-25 school year, a very big investment that hopefully will help to encourage more young people to go into teaching, but also help school districts to recruit those folks straight out of college and from other jobs as well. And that does not include local supplements. So that's the base pay coming from the state. Just to give you a sense of how big of an investment that is and what a difference it would make, the Office of State and Budget and Management estimates that that investment in teacher pay would move our average teacher salary from a little over $57,000 this year to over $68,000 by the 24-25 school year. And that does include local supplements. We would go from 32nd nationally to 16th. And from third to first in the Southeast. And those Southeastern states are the ones that we're often competing with for, for jobs for teachers. Starting teacher pay would go from, as I said, 37,000 to 46,000. Our nationally, we'd go from 46th to 16th and from 11th in the Southeast. That's 11th out of 12 states to second in the Southeast. So we have really fallen behind in teacher pay over the last few years. A lot of Southeastern states have made big investments in teachers, South Carolina, Alabama, Georgia, Florida. And so we really need to work to keep pace to help make sure that we can still recruit and retain our educators, but also to help our districts address the teacher shortages that are out there. In addition to those increases in salaries for teachers, the governor's also proposed increases for our non-certified staff, and including bus drivers, teacher assistants, as well as our staff, district administrators as well. So those increases would be 6.5% in the first year and 3% in the second year for those individuals. So bus drivers and teaching assistants and other non-certified staff. For school administrators, the pay raise would be the same as teachers, 10% in the first year, 6% in the second year. In addition, the governor's also proposing bringing back master's pay for all educators. Since 2013, I believe it is, educators have not been eligible for master's pay. In addition to that, the governor's also proposed some investments in helping to recruit and retain those teachers. As part of the investment for a sound basic education that's been required by the courts, the governor's proposed dramatically increasing the Teaching Fellows program to where we'd be serving more than 1,700 Teaching Fellows a year, as well as increasing the new teacher support program, which would help our school districts provide mentoring and coaching support to new teachers so that hopefully they both become better teachers, but also choose to stay in their districts.
And so, you know, that addresses the recruitment and retention, the pipeline issue, whether it be, you know, with school psychologists, teachers, how is that addressed? Because last I checked, that was lacking.
Yes, it has been. And unfortunately, our pipeline has been struggling over the last decade or so. And we have seen a little bit of an uptick, but need to keep working on it. And I think obviously a big piece of that is salaries. We know that there was a report that came out from Best NC recently that showed that beginning teachers in particular, and in their first 5 to 6 years, I believe, they're not earning a living wage with current salaries. So I can't imagine anybody that would be considering teaching would want to go into it if they don't think they're going to be able to sustain and support their family. So these kind of investments are important. I think they'll help to encourage more folks to come along. But also, as I said, I think on the pipeline side, we really need to be focusing on opportunities to get more teachers and principals into the pipeline. So the expansion of the Teaching Fellows program is an important part of that. The governor also has some investments, again, that are called for in the sound basic education ordered by the court, in programs like Grow Your Own that would help school districts develop programs to recruit more high school students to go into teaching and then provide them with opportunities to pursue that. The budget also includes, and this was something that was funded last year, but would be an expansion of this, a high needs district recruitment retention program that would allow districts to provide bonuses to teachers that come and work in those high needs districts. For principals, again, increased salaries are important, making sure that they're being compensated fairly. But also, the governor invests in a further expansion of the Principal Fellows Program and the Transforming Principal Preparation Partnerships. This program would help districts recruit educators out of their ranks to become principals, so selecting the ones that they think are going to be great, provide them with stipends to pursue their education, but also to come back and work as interns, and then to eventually transition, hopefully, into an assistant principal and then onto a principal job after that.
Okay, so that really does hit on a lot of those issues. And what we've spoken about so far is, you know, more money for those coming in, more money for those that are already there. But what about funding additional positions? You know, when we put so much or talk so much about having students read on grade level by the end of third grade, and yet the teachers that are responsible and held accountable for it, you know, what we hear from them is they could use additional support. And TAs is a perfect example. You know, over the years, we've seen that ratio kind of go in the wrong direction. And what's the governor have to say about that?
Absolutely. And I think, Bruce, some of the topics you're hitting on are perfect for sort of outlining the governor's investments in a sound-based education. So as you know, our state constitution requires the state provide the resources for every child to have access and opportunity for a sound-based education. And last November, the Supreme Court upheld Judge Lee's order from November of 21 that the state was responsible for implementing what's called the Comprehensive Remedial Plan that the state had proposed and for funding that plan. And so the governor's budget fully funds the next 2 years of the Comprehensive Remedial Plan, as well as making sure that the resources that the court ordered in November are also available for districts and continue to be funded moving forward. And those investments in a sound basic education are exactly the types of things that you're talking about. Out of the money that's been ordered for implementing actions in the Comprehensive Remedial Plan, more than 90% of those funds go directly to school districts or directly to local communities for early childhood, for K-12 education, for the kind of supports that you're talking about. And these are things like supporting the education of our most at-risk students. So funds to help students from low-income families, our English language learners, our children with disabilities. And those groups of students are often the ones that need smaller class sizes or additional teachers. And so these funds would come through the regular allotments that districts receive and would be used in the same way that those other funds are. So for supplemental pay, for hiring more educators, for after school or tutoring services, for more assistance to help with exceptional children. In addition to that, there's also funding in here for for hiring more teacher assistants in K-3 classrooms and bringing that ratio down that you just mentioned. There's also
that is specifically in the governor's budget, being able to hire more teacher assistants.
That is exactly right. And the idea is that the ratio would come down to a nationally recommended student to staff ratio. I believe it's 1 to 24, I believe. I'll have to check on that. But there's $37.5 million in the first year and $75 million in the second year of the biennium so that districts can hire more teacher assistants. There's also funding in the governor's budget for hiring more of what we call specialized instructional support personnel. So counselors, nurses, social workers, and psychologists. Even before the pandemic, we've known that to be able to help children learn, you've got to address the needs of the whole child. You've got to help address their health and mental health concerns. They have to make sure that they have food, that they're well fed, and that we've addressed those needs that are important to allow children to learn. So those instructional support personnel really be critical in doing that. And the governor's budget is investments in a move to get us within the next 4 to 5 years to the nationally recommended ratios for those positions, including the proposal from the state board and the state superintendent of ensuring that every school in a tier one and tier two county has a school nurse and a school social worker if possible. So, you know, this budget is really strong and really focused on those sound basic education investments, which, you know, 75 to 80% of school funding goes to people. It's hiring people, and education is a very personnel intensive endeavor. And so you've got to have the people in the building to make sure that they can successfully support and educate our students.
You know, we are K-12, but districts pay attention and focus on what happens before the children arrive in our buildings. You know, it is very important that they have opportunities so they don't come to kindergarten already significantly behind, because, you know, studies show if you come in behind, it is really hard to catch up. You had touched on earlier that early childhood is addressed in this budget. Can you elaborate a little bit more?
Absolutely. And again, this is another critical part of our constitutional requirement and a sound basic education and what's required in the Comprehensive Remedial Plan. So our NC pre-K program, which serves at-risk four-year-olds, is considered one of the best in the country and is a gold standard that other states try to replicate. And we've had that program now for 15 years or more, and it's proven over and over again through evaluations and through research that it's successful at helping students be better prepared once they get to kindergarten and hopefully get caught up to their more advantaged peers or even get ahead if they need to. So the governor's budget continues to fund a further expansion of the NC Pre-K program. The goal in the comprehensive remedial plan is to ensure that by the end of the plan that at least 75% of at-risk four-year-olds are able to be served in the pre-K program. And so the governor's budget continues investments in that with nearly $200 million by the second year of the biennium and opening up additional slots. In addition to that, there's more funding for what's called early intervention services for at-risk 3 and 4 year olds or 0 to 3 year olds. So these are students who might have a learning disability of some sort or are developmentally delayed or just at risk in other ways. And DHHS provides support services to those students before they get to school age to try and help them be better prepared. You know, another challenge that we've seen, and this is not just an early childhood issue, but also a broader workforce issue, is childcare. During the pandemic, a lot of our childcare centers were struggling because they didn't have a workforce, students were not coming. And so the governor has proposed some further investments in childcare stabilization grants to help make sure that our childcare centers have the resources they need to stay open and continue providing quality childcare, but also in subsidy so that low-income families can afford to send their children to childcare. Because childcare, as the governor says, is a trifecta. Not only is it good for the child because they're getting quality childcare, early learning services, it's good for the parent because then they can go to work, and it's good for the business because then the business has the worker to help get the job done. So those kind of investments are critical. They're also a part of a sound-based education and are also funded in the governor's budget.
You've covered a lot, right? And the education portion of the budget is the largest piece of the state budget.
That's correct.
And I think it's fair to say that the education budget from the last one to this one that's being proposed has, the proposal is a significant amount more. And what we heard from Republican House and Senate leaders after the governor released his budget is that it's unrealistic, pie in the sky. I mean, you can go on and on. How does the governor respond to that?
I think the governor said it best at a school event, actually, last week after the governor was the budget was unveiled. He responded to the question by saying he's used to hearing that kind of feedback after being in office in 6 years. And so, but I think there's a couple of key things to point out, though, is that the governor's budget is balanced as required, but it's also fair, while also saving for a rainy day. And a couple of things that I'll point out there. So the governor's budget implements tax breaks for middle-class families, but keeps in place current tax rates for wealthy individuals and for companies. You know, the North Carolina Chamber has said that we don't need a tax rate that's at zero. We are right now, with the tax rates that are implemented, at the lowest corporate tax rate, I think, in our region. And so we don't need to further reduce rates. And so it's important that the state, in order to support strong communities, to have the education that our students deserve and that's required, and that we have families that are being successful and healthy, that we need to make sure that our tax code is fair and that everyone's paying their fair share. Even more importantly than that, you know, our state over the last several years is growing and we've got really strong revenues fiscally. As I said earlier, we've got a $3 billion surplus and sort of are in a very healthy fiscal situation. But it's also important that we're prepared in the future. And we've all been hearing, you know, concerns that we could be seeing a recession at some point in the future. So, you know, to be fiscally sound and fiscally responsible, the governor keeps more than $7 billion in reserves in his budget in case there is a downturn. So making sure that the rainy day fund is fully funded, that we've got other reserve funds that are critical for helping us weather any type of downturn is there. This is obviously responsible, it's sound, but it also shows the potential that we can do if we're prudent in how we manage tax breaks and we don't give unnecessary ones to wealthy and large corporations, but we actually use funds in a way that invests in our people to help grow prosperity for everyone.
Thank you for that answer. But the bottom line, though, is that the governor's budget in year one is almost $33 billion. House Republicans and Senate Republicans, since they control both chambers, they have already agreed to a budget amount. And that is a little more than $3 billion less than the governor's proposed budget. So how does the governor rectify that? You know, you have all these things and you talk about it being sound and you talk about it being balanced and responsible. But at the end of the day, it's more than $3 billion more than what the House and Senate leaders say they're willing to spend.
Absolutely. And I think it comes down to the choice that the governor's laid out, I think, is that we either need to choose to invest in our families, our students, our communities, so that we can continue with shared prosperity and really take advantage of the opportunities that we have before us, or we invest in more tax cuts and tax breaks, which will not make the investments that we need in our students, families, and communities. And so, you know, as I said, the budget the governor laid out is sound, it's prudent, it's responsible, and it makes those necessary investments. You know, I would say that the at least the targets that the General Assembly is saying is not using the funds that we have available to us now to make those investments in our students, our families, and our communities.
All right. Jeff, thank you. I would like to give you the final word here. If there's anything else that you'd like to say or add about the governor's budget, or you know what, anything else that you want to talk about.
Sure. Well, I think it's an exciting budget proposal. It's one that really puts our students, our educators, and our public schools first, making sure that we're living up to our constitutional commitment and our constitutional responsibility of providing a sound basic education, and really helping to elevate the needs of our educators and our students so that they can get the job done. And I'll just say thank you to all of your school board members out there that are listening to say the important role that they play in making sure that their students are taken care of, that their students are educated. And this budget is trying to help make sure that they've got the resources they need to get that job done. So thank you very much for having me again today.
Yeah, it is always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks. Thank you, Bruce. Sorry, next time I'll have a better coaster for you at this board table.
Thanks. Yeah, this napkin's not quite handy.
Oh, all right. Thanks again.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you, Jeff and Bruce. We look forward to seeing in the coming days what the General Assembly presents in its version of the budget.
Have you ever heard the saying, if you're not at the table, then you're on the menu? Subscribe to this podcast to make sure you always have a seat at the table. If there's a topic you want us to cover in a future episode of The Board Table, let us know. You can find us on Twitter at NCSBA, Facebook at NC School Boards Association, or email us at info@ncsba.org. Until next time.